driving across inland southeastern Australia from Canberra to Adelaide when I was a child all those years ago, nobody in my family could ever have conceived of Western quolls being back in that country where once they'd thrived. By the time my father was a young boy in the 1950s, quolls had disappeared from South Australia, and in that decade both the northern and southern pig-footed bandicoots likely became extinct entirely, joining the 18 other species of mammal that had been driven to extinction before them since European arrival in Australia. Now, in both my father's and my lifetimes, Western quolls have been returned, and perhaps, if I were to have children, those children would never know the red soil of arid Australia without the imprint of quoll feet. Living in the present moment can feel like living under a rain of blows, with no hope of them ending any time soon. With the 2019-20 bushfires, then the pandemic, resurgent threats to democracy, whatever else may come next, so many of us are feeling worn down to the nub. In the midst of the pandemic, it's understandable that very many people, probably most people, want to return to normal post-COVID. Apart from the fact that vast numbers of people have lost income and security and naturally want to regain what they've lost, normal is comforting because of its familiarity, even if the normal world of pre-2020 was one in which huge numbers of people were miserable and exploited. And of course, that misery and that exploitation hasn't ended just because the world has changed. The people suffering the most at the hands of the pandemic, and more to the point suffering from the political response to it, are those who were already suffering the most before the pandemic. People who are unemployed or in casual work, the homeless, the poor, the marginalised, people who work in areas not deemed sufficiently productive, in inverted commas. In the midst of stage 4 lockdown in Melbourne, unable under threat of fine to travel more than 5 kilometres from my home, a home which because I'm only renting I'm liable in a normal year to lose at any time as I've lost other homes before, I couldn't help reflecting on the fact that I was, all the same, one of the lucky ones. My day job, which is full-time and salaried with all the perks that entails such as paid sick leave and paid holiday time, had continued. And other than my dog and my cat, I have no dependents, no people other than myself in my immediate orbit who I need to sustain. Though I wasn't able to visit my parents or brother in Canberra for 9 months of 2020, and while in lockdowns I didn't know when I might next be able to, I'd all the same lost none of my means. I'm a homebody at the best of times, and my life had not materially changed very much, and as such I still had the capacity within me to work and write, while friends and family around me and in my social media feed struggled to do the same. Yet to feel yourself as part of a community, or even just to want to feel yourself as such, is to willingly feel sorrow and pain and anger for other people. The same is true, I think, if we're to feel ourselves part of the natural world. But this is a heavy, hard burden to bear, particularly for those people working on the front lines of conservation. And this is a quote. "The scale of the destruction has challenged what is fundamentally an optimistic worldview held by conservationists, that with sufficient time and money every species threatened by Australia's 250 years of colonial transformation cannot just be saved from extinction, but can flourish once again," wrote a group of conservation scientists in an article published by The Conversation in the aftermath of the 2019-20 bushfires. But grief and anger can be catalysts for action, especially when paralysis and inaction would only further deepen the existing problems. And I quote, "So many of us are wondering, have lives spent furthering conservation been wasted? Should we give up on conservation work when destruction can be wrought on the environment at such unprecedented scales? The answer is, simply, no. As we grieve, we must also remember that decades of conservation work has not been in vain. Some populations and species may indeed have been lost in the recent fires. We shall not know until long after the smoke clears. But the conservation efforts of the past mean fewer species have been lost than would otherwise have been the case." End quote. Many people, in the face of the ever-increasing threats we've unleashed upon the planet, look to find safe haven for themselves far away from anyone else, on islands, in bunkers, in compounds. But there are layers of privilege inherent in this mentality, not just because only people of sufficient financial means can afford to wall themselves off from the rest of the world, or buy property on which to live out the increasing dangers of the modern world, but less obviously because jobs and services are concentrated in cities. People who depend upon those jobs and services to pay the bills or the rent or just to get through each day in good health or something like it, don't have a realistic option of decamping to somewhere remote and secluded. Safety comes in many forms at an individual level, but at a societal level, true safety, I think, comes only through community, not through turning away from the world, but in leaning into it ever deeper, ever more messily and completely. The fantasy of an isolationist is one in which everybody else is a danger. It's a fantasy that recurs again and again in speculative fiction, and one which is not necessarily without a basis in reality. But we're social animals, and if we're to find a way out of this, then it needs to be as a society. I often think of the late American writer Barry Lopez's simple treatise in his final book, Horizon. Quote, "I want everyone here to survive what is coming."